Rutland City Council. We'll come back to order from recess. Today is Wednesday, May 19th, 2012, and we're in afternoon session. Carla, can you please call the roll?
Fish. Saltzman?
Here.
Leonard? Here. Fritz?
Here.
Adams?
Here. Let's, if it's okay with the council, let's begin with the 2 o'clock time certain, and then we'll take the holdovers from the morning. So obviously, brevity is of high value. Please read the title.
Item 703, grant revocable permits to the Portland Rose Festival Foundation to perform activities relating to Portland Rose Festival annual celebration from May 22 through June 13, 2010.
Good afternoon. Welcome back.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. I'm Allison Madsen. I'm the Special Events Coordinator for the City of Portland. And I'm here this afternoon with someone I'm sure you recognize, Jeff Curtis, the Executive Director of the Rose Festival Foundation. We're here today with the ordinance that represents a year's work for the Rose Festival staff, volunteers, and a large number of city employees and partner agency employees. This ordinance authorizes 3 parades, the Waterfront Village, and the associated street closures and other logistics involved with having the event. I could talk at length about the Rose Festival and what it means with the city, but I wrote myself a note so I avoid doing just that. 2010 is the 103rd year of this great source of civic pride, as well as the first year as the official festival of the City of Portland, as adopted by this council earlier in the year. Your efforts working in partnership with the Rose Festival Foundation bring to life a series of events that draw people together not only from our fair city, but from the region, all corners of the country, and the world. I would like to take a moment just to recognize the staff of Portland Police Office, Transportation, Water, Parks and Recreation, as well as the regional agencies of TriMet, Multnomah County, and ODOT. These professionals take great pride in their contributions to the city's official festival, and the Rose Festival Foundation staff and their volunteers cannot be overlooked. No other Portland event has such a dedicated, long-serving volunteer base. So for so many reasons, I'm really proud to be here to present this ordinance to you for your support.
Thanks, Allison. Jeff Curtis, Executive Director of the Rose Festival Foundation. You know, we're coming here next week with our court, and so they're going to come and really give you all the details of Rose Festival, which I'm really looking forward to, and all the different events and aspects. And that's really the tangible side. I want to just take a moment to talk a little about the intangibles of Rose Festival. Other tangibles that we often refer to are the economic impact of the festival and all those very important pieces that make this a viable part of our community and a necessary part of our community. But it's the intangibles that sometimes get forgotten. And that's coming true this year in our theme called Rose Spirit. And that can mean a lot of things to a lot of different people. But where I see that most prevalently, and I see it every year during the Rose Festival, and I'm really proud of this particular theme. Every year, as executive director, I get a chance to see people and talk to different people and what this means to them. And I had a moment last year that really struck me and will be with me probably for my life, related to some citizens that were engaged in Rose Festival. It took place at Waterfront Village down at the park. And as you know, last year was a difficult economy, just like this is a difficult economy for a lot of our citizens. And as I was sitting there enjoying the event and participating in it, which I do every day, a family sat next to me, and they sat down. And it was really struck me. It was two parents and 2 children, and they had this big cooler with them. And that struck me because we usually don't allow coolers. But at the same time, when someone walks in the cooler, we don't say no to that. Absolutely. We just let it happen. But they sat down, and they got in, and they started getting out sandwiches and some grapes and some chips. And it was the manner of conversation that I heard that I think is struck me. And this was a family from Southeast Portland. They got the sandwiches out, and they put a little piece of sandwich in front of each of their children and then started dividing up the grapes, little things of grapes, and then some chips. And the conversation was, what struck me was, and I was about 3 feet away from them, they didn't know who I was, but they said to their children, you know, this is all we have this year. It's a tough year for us. So no cotton candy, no hot dogs. This is it. And those kids, and I have no idea what their age were, but their response to their parents were was, Mom, Dad, thank you for taking me to the Rose Festival. And that's an example of Rose Spirit. It's an intangible. We talk about the tangibles, but that's an intangible piece of it that struck me, and I hope I have more. I know I have more of those memories, but the reality is that takes place on the parade routes. That takes place all over this town, and I think that that should never be forgotten publicly or within our organization of what we really are trying to achieve. So that's the relevance of this ordinance, is every council for 103 years has the authority to grant the Rose Festival the necessary permits to make it happen, and that's your role, and I am very grateful for you, and that is a responsibility that shouldn't be overlooked. And on behalf of my board, my staff, and the volunteers and citizens that enjoy Rose Festival, we thank you for your support of the Rose Festival. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any discussion from council before we take testimony and vote on this? Thank you both very much. Anyone signed up?
No one signed up.
Anyone wish to testify? It's an emergency. Carla, would you please call the vote?
Fish.
Thank you, Jeff, for the presentation. And we're also very excited about the service program that that we've jointly devised that will involve the Rose Festival Court helping an elderly resident of our community rehab her house. And we're very grateful for that partnership. And I'm looking forward to the parade. In fact, I'll be marching with Daimler in the Starlight Parade. And thanks to everybody from the Rose Festival for what you do for our city. And Commissioner Leonard, thank you for being the council rabbi for this great organization. Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, thank you. I look forward to a great festival. Sorry I won't be here next week to see the court, but I've been at two events already where they have been, so I've seen them. And we had the Princess from Marshall, Juliana Cobell, worked in my office over spring break. And so our office is rooting for Juliana. But great festival. Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
No pressure, Commissioner Saltzman. Yeah. Thank you very much, Jeff, and the Rose Festival for supporting this wonderful event over 100 years, and I greatly appreciate everybody who's involved. It's fun to think that this year, it's good to think that this year, to know that this year everybody is sharing the sidewalks, and because of the sidewalk management ordinance that we have, everybody is welcome to be on the parade route, and that we have the ordinance that Commissioner Leonard led last year to make sure that people can camp overnight just for the Rose Parade. And we also know that we will be sharing the sidewalks with those who live outside throughout the Rose Festival. So I greatly appreciate that and the good work of our police who keep the peace with so many people coming into our city. And we need to make sure that we look after our current residents. I'm looking forward to leading the Grand Floral Walk, as I did last year. That'll be fun. And again, thank you for all you do. Aye.
Adams.
Great work. When is the, what's it, the Origanus Augustus, or is that, are you choosing one this year? No. He's having a year off, or she's having a year off. Okay. Thanks for all your work. Aye. So approved. That moves us to the regular agenda. We're going to skip 693 to hear 694 and 695 together.
694.
Amen. We not?
We're finishing up the morning agenda.
Oh, excuse me. Okay.
It should go pretty fast.
694, amend contract with Oregon Ironworks, Inc. for the production of prototype streetcar vehicle. And 695, amend contract with Portland Streetcar, Inc. to provide additional professional services for project management and vehicle engineering services for production of a domestically manufactured streetcar.
Well, for those of you that don't know, we have transit royalty amongst us. Roger Shields is here.
Oh.
That's you. And also Vicki Deedy to take us through what we're considering today.
Yes. Roger Shields is going to discuss the first item on the agenda, which is the amendment to the contract for Oregon Ironworks for the prototype streetcar vehicle, and I'll discuss the second item, which is an amendment to the Portland Streetcar, Inc. contract during this time frame. So, Roger Shields.
Okay, thank you. My name is Roger Shields. The ordinance that's before you would modify the contract the city currently has with Oregon Ironworks to build a prototype streetcar. The contract amount is currently $3.6 million, funded from a $4.4 million federal grant. $2.5 million of that has been approved for payment so far. The purpose of the amendment is to substitute an electrical what I would call electrical propulsion system in the prototype vehicle to develop it, to test it, and to certify it. If anybody wants to know what an electrical propulsion system is, I'm not going to be able to explain it in any detail, but fundamentally it's an electrical, electronic nerve center of a vehicle, and it controls many, many devices. It includes hardware and software, and it represents about 20 to 25% of the cost of the vehicle. The modification that's before you would have Rockwell Automation, Inc. of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, develop this system. It's a, as since Wisconsin's in the United States, it's obvious it would be built here and be an American-built system, which is not available currently. This would increase the Buy America content, according to Oregon Ironworks, to 90%, which is fairly impressive, and will have some effect on future federal funding issues. As with the current contract, the cost for this work is covered entirely by federal grant or Oregon Ironworks itself. So there's no city money in this. This is one of those unusual projects. Usually I wouldn't be here on something like this, but last month the FTA announced that they had approved a $2.4 million federal grant for the purpose of making this replacement. Of that, $1.2 million will go to Oregon Ironworks. The cost actually is expected to be $1.8 million, which they will pay. And the remaining money involves in the grant at the 1.2 are other services, city TriMet staff, project management, vehicle engineering and oversight of the replacement. And that will be coming back to council in the future. Let's see, payment. I mentioned the payment. Well, the contract is very clear that the payment to Oregon Ironworks is conditioned on this grant approval. On you receiving the money will come from FTA through TriMet to you, that is the city. And if it doesn't get here, there's no obligation under this change. Contract will be extended to July 1, 2011. And when the car is complete, the city will own it virtually without any cost, local cost, and it will be included in the fleet that's needed to run the East Side Loop project that opens hopefully in 2012. Any questions? I'd be happy to answer.
Well, it's exciting that the federal government is giving us the resources to switch out a European-made propulsion system for a U.S.-made propulsion system. And you're right, Wisconsin since 1848 has been a part of the United States. Thank you for underscoring that fact. They beat us by 3 years in terms of founding of the city.
See, I didn't know that, so I'll put that in my access to remaining brain bank.
Wikipedia. Ms. Deedy, you want to talk about the other one?
Yes, the other item before you is to amend the contract with Portland Streetcar, Inc. for both project management and vehicle engineering services during this interim time frame between now and when the new grant comes in from the feds. We have resources in the original grant that started this whole process with the prototype that have not been committed, and we are now taking the last of that and committing it so that we can manage a process until we get the new grant money.
So one thing on the, there's a concern, I ran into someone today or tweeted, someone tweeted me that the bridge closure of the Broadway Bridge and other restrictions for trucks make local deliveries really hard. So if you could help us get on top of that.
Absolutely. In fact, we are in contact with, I think, one of the people who emailed into the city, and we're laying out some routes for them right now so we can make that happen for them.
Any other discussion from council? Has anyone signed up to testify for 694 or 695?
I did not have sign-up sheets.
Can you please call the vote on 694?
Fish.
Thank you. Aye.
Saltzman.
Work. Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Frank. Fritz?
This is good to hear that there's resources coming in, that the taxpayers' money isn't being spent on this part of the project. It shows what a good overall project it is, that we're leveraging jobs and creating business. Aye.
Adams.
Aye. Can you please call the vote for item number 695?
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fit. Adams?
Aye. So approved. Can you please read the title for emergency ordinance item number 697?
Authorize an intergovernmental agreement and jurisdictional transfer agreement with the Oregon Department of Transportation for jurisdictional transfer of portions of Southwest NATO Parkway, I-405 to Southwest Market Street, and Southwest Harbor Drive, Southwest River Parkway to Southwest NATO Parkway.
And could you also read its companion emergency ordinance item number 698?
Authorize memorandum of understanding with TriMet and the U.S. Department of Transportation Federal Transit Administration for federal assistance under the Transportation Investment Generating Economic Recovery Grants Program for the Southwest Moody Street and Streetcar Reconstruction Project.
So just a few comments by way of introduction. This is a project of citywide, region-wide significance. It helps to make real the OHSU Snitzer campus, which is an important part of the Portland Innovation Quadrant that stretches to both sides of the Willamette River. That is the part of our strategy, the economic development strategy, that includes enhancing the connections and collaborations between higher education institutions, workforce development providers, and private sector partners, for which we've got great strengths in each of the districts within the quadrant. These agenda items continue the development of transit and multimodal improvements for the Innovation Quadrant and are absolutely essential for our mobility plans for South Waterfront District, which has an expectation in its design to be half of the those that are accessing South Waterfront on a regular basis will do so with means other than driving their car. This TIGER grant funding in the amount of $23 million, which we lobbied the federal government for successfully, and I'd like to thank our federal delegation for their help, supports this multimodal future for this district. We have Jody Yates and Chris Arms with the Bureau of Transportation, as well as Christine Moody, to discuss the agenda items together, 697 and 698.
Good afternoon. My name is Jody Yates. I'm with the Bureau of Transportation. As Mayor Adams indicated, we have a convergence of transportation capital projects in North McAdam and South Waterfront District. In front of you is a map, and I'll describe some of the improvements that have been happening or are going to be happening.
We just have a blue screen.
Yeah, we
have
a
blue
screen. Well, I got one up there, and I don't have a screen either.
Okay. Mouse.
Oops. What happened here?
There we go.
All right.
Oops, now we don't have ours.
Oops.
We lost ours, too.
Now we have a blue screen.
There we go.
There we go.
We just use that one. Hold on. We don't have ours here.
We have a choice. Either you can see it or we can see it. It's humid.
No.
It's humid.
We can give it.
We got blue now.
I can operate.
Got it.
There we go.
Do you have it?
I see the mouse.
Yeah,
yes.
I can see it.
Yeah. But I have to do start over on the slide. Thank you. Okay.
I want the judges to subtract this time from my chairing minute record.
No, doesn't count.
Commissioner Fritz still holds the record.
Oh, do get
it was like, what, 45 seconds? Something like that?
It's before 10. Yeah. I'm really not counting.
Yes, you are. You tell me every day. Well, not every day.
And I also encourage you to take the time needed.
Okay, do you have written? You don't have printed out handouts, do you?
Do you have it?
There we go.
Do you have it?
Yes.
We have All right. It. Okay. So in 2007, ODOT and the city proceeded with a modification. There was an I-5 ramp that was proposed. There it is. This was the I-5 northbound off-ramp at McAdam. ODOT and the city were proposing a flyover ramp. They had a budget of $30 million, and this would separate McAdam from the off-ramp vehicular traffic. In 2007, we revisited the project and re-estimated the cost at $60 million, and it would also require 25 to 30 feet of additional right-of-way. There was basically no one happy with that result. We, in 2007 and 8, we being ODOT and the city, did a collaborative effort and reassessed our goals, those being safety, access to South Waterfront from the freeway, and within the budget of $30 million. What we did was delete the I-5 ramp project and replace it with two projects, the Southwest Harbor and Southwest River Parkway intersection improvements and the Southwest Moody Avenue reconstruction project. Concurrently, in the spring and fall of 2008, there was the North District Partnership, which convened OHSU, TriMet, Zidel, GHS, which is another property owner in the North District of South Waterfront, PDC, and PBOT. During this partnership, they agreed to the street plan in the North District, which are the black lines that you see on your map in front of you. Those are not built streets at this time. City Council adopted that street plan in fall of 2009. They also agreed to elevating the grade at Porter and Moody, which is where light rail will cross. There is, in purple is the light rail alignment. And the intersection of Porter and Moody is circled, and that is the elevation will increase from its current grade to 14 feet higher. This accommodates the One Limit River Bridge crossing for river traffic and then comes down to cross at grade with Moody. Additionally, in September of 2009, the city applied for the economic stimulus funding to support the Moody project, also known as the Tiger Grant. In February 2010, this past February, we learned that from the federal government that the city was awarded $23 million in Tiger funds. Going back to the light rail project, also during its planning, TriMet and Metro proposed a crossing of NATO, Southwest NATO, at Lincoln Street. TriMet was showing an at-grade crossing, and ODOT has current jurisdiction over this roadway being Southwest NATO, would require a bridge over NATO and not be at grade. This is an increase in cost to the project. The city, however, if we take jurisdiction, would allow an at-grade crossing. So one of the agenda items is to accept jurisdiction of Southwest NATO from basically I-405 to the north at, I believe that's Southwest Market Street. We already have jurisdiction of NATO north at that point. Also, we would be taking in the same jurisdictional transfer, Southwest Harbor, from Southwest NATO to Southwest River Parkway. This actually fulfills a 1989 ordinance that said when we constructed the Southwest Harrison Connector, we would assume jurisdiction from ODOT for that portion of the roadway of Southwest Harbor. Staff is asking that you approve the two agenda items before you, one to authorize us to proceed to an agreement with the FTA for receiving the $23 million in funds for the Moody project, as well as approving the jurisdictional transfer of Southwest NATO and Southwest Harbor.
Thanks. So the crossing at NATO, you said, would be at grade. Was it originally proposed to be elevated?
No, in TriMet's documentation and Metro's documentation, it's always been proposed at grade.
So does that mean we have to have traffic stops?
There would be some sort of crossing improvement there, yes.
Other discussion? Do you want to move to the next one?
Yes, the next agenda item actually relates to Southwest Moody as well, and Christine will take that one.
They've requested to read 702 as part of these items.
Oh, okay.
702, authorize an exemption to the competitive bidding process to procurement services pursuant to ORS Chapter 279C and City Code 5.34 for the Southwest Moody Avenue project, Southwest Moody Avenue, Southwest River Parkway, Southwest Gibbs Street, roadway and track relocation.
Christine Moody, Procurement Services. The ordinance you have before you asks for an exemption to the traditional low bid process using an RFP process to select a construction manager general contractor for the Southwest Moody Avenue project. The project involves technical complexities and requires specialized expertise for its construction within a very tight time frame. The project must be operational by February of 2012 in order to meet the funding requirements of the $23 million federal stimulus Tiger Grant. Procurement Services and PBOT will conduct a competitive RFP process to select the CMGC. The successful CMGC will participate in the final engineering phase of the project for value engineering and constructability review, will assist in developing phasing and construction planning, and will provide the highly specialized skills required and needed in order to complete the project by the 2012 deadline. Using this process will result in substantial cost savings to the public because the CMGC will participate in value engineering and constructability reviews and will develop construction phasing plan and well-coordinated project schedule. Also, the CMGC will have more time and opportunity to negotiate costs than normally afforded during the traditional low bid process. So the construction work for this project is estimated at $25 million and will be built under the Federal Transit Administration regulations and requirements. I'll turn this back over to council if you have questions.
So this is 702.
This is item 702, yes.
So it says $43,685,000.
That is the total construction, total project cost. The construction cost is just estimated at $25 million.
I see. And then you say that within the document that the confidence is low as to the cost. Is that because it could be actually lower given the cost of projects coming out, or potentially could be higher?
When the project was initially estimated at full build-out, we estimated the total project to be $66 million, and that's what we applied for the Tiger Grant. We received only a portion of the Tiger Grant funds, and so the total budget we have is 43, and we are designing the project to meet that budget.
But it's under our rules, it's considered low confidence because it's at the, 30% level?
Yes, and TriMet has been carrying that in the light rail plans. Earlier today, you passed an ordinance for the engineering services contract. So we actually haven't started our engineering at this point.
Okay. Other council discussion? Has anyone signed up to testify 697, 98, or 702? All right, Carla, can you please call the roll on these three items, or the vote on these three items?
697, Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. 697 is approved. Can you please call the vote on 698?
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. 698 is approved. Can you please call the vote on 702?
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
So just to emphasize, we're getting $23 million in federal funding, at least, on this. So it's a really great thing for the city. Aye.
Adams?
Just on that note, when I was last at the U.S. Conference of Mayors, there was a lot of well-intentioned sort of teasing and bitterness. This is one of the largest Tiger Awards on the West Coast. So, aye.
Congratulations.
Let's go to resolution item number 704.
We were holding off on 693 till later.
Okay.
Yeah.
704, establish financial assistance guidelines for the Portland Housing Bureau.
Ms. Van Vliet, welcome back.
Thank you, Mayor Adams and Commissioners. Good afternoon. I will be joined, I'm sure, momentarily by Comey Calivore, a member of my team, who's working on these business items with us. So I want to just give you a very brief update on the transition towards the creation of the Portland Housing Bureau. and report to you that we are on time and will be complete with the transition on July 1st of this year. I would say we're also on budget and on mission, so feeling very good about the progress towards creating one bureau. And really want to appreciate the support that the council has given, not just to the bureau, but also to the work we do around housing and homelessness. So, and this is Comey Calvor, who runs the housing development finance section at the Portland Housing Bureau. So I'm going to set a little bit of context before I turn it over to Comey. We're doing a lot of work towards this transition and getting a lot of the business process pieces put in place, as well as kind of the policy pieces. PDC, as you know, is the city's bank, and so we're taking a significant chunk of their banking business and pulling it over into the city. And part of the way they've managed to do that is that they have pretty set guidelines and rules for underwriting. They have a committee process established with knowledgeable staff on underwriting and deal structuring. There's a certain level of delegated authority that the director of PDC has. And what we're hoping to do is replicate many of those pieces on the city side, but at a smaller scale to better match the housing business. And then wherever possible, we're going to work to increase sort of citizen oversight and transparency and put the work a little bit more in the public eye. Another important part of the context that I want to report to you is we're making good progress towards merging the two pretty different cultures. I'm excited to have the employees all on the city's city employment in a couple of months. We are working hard to sort of rethink the best parts of the two processes around community engagement, around how we do citizen advisory processes, and so forth. We're also trying to think very intentionally about how we create a continuum of housing, how our housing products, our contracts, our lending, and those different pieces we do fit into the broader context of a continuum of housing from homelessness all the way through homeownership assistance. I want to report to you that we were working very hard on an equity agenda so that we make sure that our housing products really reach communities of color that have experienced disparate impacts on all measures of poverty, including housing barriers. And we want to do our work really in the context of larger planning efforts, certainly including the Portland Plan, but economic development strategy, schools, transit, and the like. So lots of work happening on lots of dimensions, and this piece we're asking you to look at today is really a core piece of how we're going to do the business that, as I say, Comey runs for us. It's the housing development finance loan products, the multifamily lending functions, if you will. So the first item is number 704. It's the ordinance that establishes loan guidelines. Comey?
My name is Comey Calavor. Good afternoon, Mayor Adams, commissioners. As Margaret mentioned, we have six loan products that are being adopted by the Bureau. And I'll just describe them briefly.
Yes.
The first one, and I believe these are this is Exhibit A, which is attached to the resolution. The first one is a housing development subordinate loan. That's a loan for projects, affordable housing projects that have enough cash flow to pay amortizing loans. The second one is equity gap and a cash flow note. And the equity gap is for affordable housing projects whose rents are very affordable. This is for single people making $16,000 to $20,000 a year or less, and families making about $30,000 in that neighborhood. So the rents are very low, and what the cash flow note does is it allows the projects to it allows them the freedom to manage their projects, and they are only liable to pay back the loans when they have a good year. They have a bad year, they don't owe anything. This is a product we target for the very low-income citizens. We also have a community facility grant, so where we have facilities like a daycare center or men's shelter or women's shelter or any of that sort, we have a facility grant. And grants are typically forgiven after an extended use period. And the use period could be anywhere from 10 to 60 years, depending on policy. We also have, next, this is number four, is the housing development subordinate loan, similar to the first one. The first one is for rental projects. The fourth one, the housing development subordinate loan, is for sale projects. On occasion, we finance construction of developments. There's two that are going on currently, both in interstate. One is called Orange Splat. It's part of the New Columbia. It's the last piece of the New Columbia. It's 8 units being developed by a group called Orange Splat. The banks will not lend. The site has been vacant for a few years. So to complete the Blight or to complete the New Columbia projects, we're able to come through with a housing development subordinate loan for that particular project. Another one is called PCRI Target Homes, which is west of New Columbia also. And the for sale, the housing development for sale loan products, we expect to be repaid in full when those homes are completed and sold. And we have a good track record on doing that. Number five is the housing development bridge loan. And the bridge loan is exactly what it says. The bridge loan is designed to tide developers over while they seek permanent loans. Sometimes banks are slow in responding to timing needs of their developments. And if they are developments that are critical to our housing mission, we'll do a bridge loan and we expect to be repaid within a year or two. And the last one, which is number six, is a pre-development loan. And pre-development loan helps with studying the market, the feasibility, the soils, and the rental markets before development is established. They are risky loans, but we have been successful so far with that product. So with that, I turn it back to Margaret.
So I think the only thing I would add before taking your questions is that the guidelines, we expect to revisit in the context of a couple of things. We want to do a really robust analysis of the portfolio that we currently have and understand kind of what lessons learned there are and think about maybe modifying some of the parameters inside those guidelines. The other piece is that we are going to be doing some planning and some focus groups. We want to get back some feedback from customers and see if they recommend any policy changes. So it's very possible, likely, that we'll come back within the year and ask you to reapprove some guidelines with some modified parameters. But effectively, we're bringing these over as they are at PDC administered. So with that, I'd take your questions.
Discussion from council. Anyone wish to test it?
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for briefing me. And when we talked in my office, we talked about the citizen advisory capacity. Could you talk a little bit about what your plans are for citizens?
Absolutely, and that's connected to the next item as well. And so what we want to be able to do is look at all the points where people have access to our resources and make sure that we have some citizen input and a robust way to have community engagement in guiding those. So at the point where a project gets to the loan stage and we're underwriting and applying some of these parameters, it's pretty well cooked. But we do think that we have room within the establishment of a housing investment committee, which is item 705 today, where we can place a citizen on that commission. But I think probably the place where we have more impact is upstream from when a loan is getting underwritten. And so we are taking a look at how can we make sure there's input further upstream before a project gets to underwriting as well. I think there's probably more impact at that point, but we want it throughout. So, yeah, thank you for that prompt.
Does anyone wish to testify on 704?
Can I just ask one question?
Of course.
I think you know of the interests of constructing a safe house for survivors of human trafficking.
I do.
Would something under the nonprofit facility grant, would that be an eligible application?
That would be an eligible application, absolutely. If there was going to be some rental of apartments or studios, then it might fit under one of the others as well, but definitely would fit under a facility grant. Okay, yeah.
And a pre-development loan as well, Commissioner, the number six, yeah.
Is there anyone that wishes to testify on 704?
Carla, can you please call the vote?
Fish?
Well, this is another step forward, Mayor, in the progress towards the complete merger of the talent and treasure of the folks who do housing at Portland Development Commission with the former Bureau of Housing and Community Development. And I want to thank Margaret and Comey for their thoughtful work in bringing this piece forward, and we are on track this July to have the merger completed. So I'm proud to vote aye.
Saltzman.
Aye. Good work.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
Congratulations, Commissioner Fish and Director Van Veet, for accomplishing a very difficult merger with great thoughtfulness and thoroughness. And I appreciate you bringing these ordinances to us today. I especially appreciate your willingness to engage with me and my bureaus with the citizen engagement piece, and we're happy to help with that.
Excellent. Aye. Adams.
I want to thank you both for your leadership and hard work in creating this brand new bureau, and your entire team for your work to put it together. It's serving, I believe, the citizens much better than the previous status quo. And a big thanks to Commissioner Nick Fish for willingness to take this on and seeing it through. It's great. Aye. So approved. Unless there's objections, 705 moves to a second reading next week. So done. We now have a series of ordinances that we have to vote on individually, but I think they concern the same thing, right?
You can read them all.
Okay. Please read 706 to 714.
706, authorized grant agreement with Bradley Engel to provide African and African-American specific navigator services at the Gateway Center for Domestic Violence Services. 707, authorized grant agreement with Catholic Charities Proyecto Unica to provide Spanish-speaking Latina-specific navigator services at the Gateway Center for Domestic Violence Services. 708, authorize a grant agreement with Russian Oregon Social Services to provide Russian-speaking specific navigator services at the Gateway Center for Domestic Violence Services. 709, authorize a grant agreement with ERCO, Refugee and Immigrant Family Strengthening Program, to provide immigrant and refugee-specific navigator services at the Gateway Center for Domestic Violence Services. 710, authorize a grant agreement with Legal Aid Services of Oregon to provide civil legal assistance services at the Gateway Center for Domestic Violence Services. 711, authorize a grant intergovernmental agreement with Multnomah County to provide technical support services for city employees and partners who work at the Gateway Center for Domestic Violence Services. 712, authorize an intergovernmental agreement with Multnomah County District Attorney's Office to provide victim advocacy and prosecution services at the Gateway Center for Domestic Violence Services. 713, authorize a grant agreement with Native American Youth and Family Center to provide Native American-specific navigator services at the Gateway Center for Domestic Violence Services. 714, authorize a grant agreement with YWCA of Greater Portland to provide navigator services at the Gateway Center for Domestic Violence Services.
Commissioner Dan Salzman.
Thank you, Mayor, and members of the council. For over 2 years, the city, Multnomah County, and community partners have been in the planning phase for a new center to help survivors of domestic violence to become self-sufficient. Today, these research, planning, and outreach efforts have culminated in the 9 different council items before us and the ultimate opening of the Gateway Center for Domestic Violence Services exactly 2 months from today, on July 20th, located at 102nd and East Burnside. The opening of this center could not be timelier. In November and December of last year, our community experienced 17 domestic violence-related deaths, and domestic violence accounts for nearly half of all of the assaults in the city of Portland. The Gateway Center will be the first publicly known and co-located location for survivors and their families to receive a myriad of services to help end the cycle of abuse. Currently, in the Portland area, survivors of domestic violence must go to numerous locations to receive the full range of service they require. This makes for an extremely time-consuming, hard-to-navigate process, which often overwhelms many survivors, especially those with children in tow, and keeps them from receiving the help and services that they need. The Gateway Center will solve this problem and add to the service spectrum. Of note, because of a partnership with the Multnomah County Courts, the Gateway Center will be the first location other than the downtown county courthouse for a survivor of domestic violence to obtain a restraining order. A federal appropriation secured by Representative Earl Blumenauer and Senator Ron Wyden will fund the equipment and technology necessary to make these remote restraining orders reality. The State Department of Human Services will be partnering with the center to provide on-site access to housing grants and state aid, including Oregon Trail cards. Legal Aid Services of Oregon will provide civil legal assistance to assist with child custody, immigration issues, and housing issues. The district attorney will ensure a specialized district attorney is on site, and we will have a district attorney victim advocate on site to help clients obtain prosecution services if they so seek them, and provide access to victims' compensation funding. Volunteers of America will have a teen-specific programming and child care specific for the children who have experienced trauma. And this part is largely funded by the Portland Children's Levy. And we will have culturally specific services from the domestic violence community, providing navigation services to help survivors navigate the systems and access the services they need through partnerships with Bradley Engel, Catholic Charities, Russian Oregon Social Services, NEA, ERCO, and the YWCA. So here to talk briefly about the agreements you have before you is Martha Strawn Morse, who is the director of the service, Mary Jevesinski of the Bradley Engel Healing Roots Center, Karen James of Catholic Charities Unica Program, and Katrina Rutova of Russian Oregon Social Services, who in just a couple weeks will be joining the center as one of its staff. Welcome.
Thank you, Mayor and Commissioners. I appreciate that you've already had a long day today, so we're going to try to keep our comments brief. Today's a great day for the Gateway Center.
Your name?
Sorry, Martha Strawn Morris, Director, Gateway Center. Excited. Today's a great day. Today we realize a final step towards the implementation vision. The Gateway Center, as you know, will be a public facility offering a variety of services specifically and exclusively for victims of family abuse. We'll be open during weekday business hours. The environment will be safe, comfortable, home-like, and have childcare so that parents have time to consider the options and next steps before them. The documents before you, the intergovernmental agreements and grants, are very carefully crafted to ensure that the benefits of co-location are realized for victims, survivors, their children, and our partners in the larger community. I'd like to thank Linda Law in the City Attorney's Office, who did a great job helping work through the substance of these documents, as well as the partners who spent time working on them. So the vision for the center has always included three things: accountability for the public investment, emphasis on consistently high-quality service delivery, and access to services for traditionally underserved populations. Because the documents before you support each of those components, I'd like to highlight each just briefly. First, accountability. The documents before you not only define who many of the on-site partners will be, they ensure that their work will be collaborative, integrated, and survivor-centered. The work of the various on-site partners will be accountable both to a 13-member advisory council, but also to you, the elected officials of both the city and the county. You will have the information you need to determine whether this investment has served our citizens as intended, because the documents before you require that on-site partners participate in data collection, dissemination, and evaluation as directed by the advisory council. The documents also support consistent service delivery because they require all partners to work closely together and to respond to each other's requests and perspectives about participants' needs. The expectation of collaboration created by the documents and the resultant consistency in high-quality service delivery is very important for the center to build trust with participants. We need to make sure that everybody has a good and experience, a valuable experience when they come to the center, but not just for the participants, for the partners in our community too. I need to build trust with police officers and other referents. So I want a police officer to know when they refer a victim to the Gateway Center that we will pick up their work where they left off and doing everything we can to ensure that the maximum benefit of the public safety intervention. Obviously, accountability for the public investment and consistent high-quality service delivery is important for many in the community, but maybe nobody more so than our minority populations who face barriers to accessing services. So the last thing that I want to highlight is the role of the navigator and how that will help us ensure access to our services for traditionally underserved populations. So the navigator is a personal guide. They're the first person that a participant meets with after they've been cleared to receive services in the center. When they sit down with a participant, they'll learn about their lives and listen to their story and talk and give information, answer questions, provide advice about services and resources. Navigators are experts in the dynamics of intimate partner violence, and they will help participants understand how those dynamics are in play in their own lives and relationships. They'll do safety planning, lethality assessments, make referrals, and set appointments. Ultimately, they'll help each participant decide if, when, and which are the next best steps for their lives. The documents before you include 6 contracts for navigator services, and 5 of them are for culturally specific services. Participants coming to our building will be treated with dignity and respect and have somebody they feel comfortable talking to who will understand their situation from their cultural perspective. Of course, our culturally specific navigators will be able to provide services to majority culture participants as well. Everybody will have good access to services in our building. And before I finish, I want to tell you that we've been really careful in the selection of our city employees, looked at them carefully for their cultural competence and diversity expertise as well. I'd like to introduce you to Diana Lee, who's in the audience. Diana is our receptionist and admin support. She's a native Portlander, but her parents immigrated here in 1975. They're Hmong. She spent the last 3 years working at ERCO doing domestic violence case management, and I really know and promise you that she will be treating people with dignity and respect and a comfort when they come in the door. I'm also really thrilled that Karina Rutova has accepted the position of program coordinator for us. That's the third and final city employee that will work in the building. Karina is here today representing ROSS, Russian Oregon Social Services, where she's worked for the last 10 years. She received her MBA in 2008, and she's another great talent on our team and is going to do great things at the center, so I'm pleased to have her. My partners here today are each recipients of the culturally specific navigator contracts, 3 of the 5. And they're just going to spend a few minutes talking about their perspective of the Gateway Center. But then we'll be done with our presentation. But Leslie Kay from Legal Aid Services of Oregon is here in the audience as well. There's Leslie. And Rod Underhill from the District Attorney's Office is also here. So if you have questions about their agreements, the 3 of us will be happy to take those as well. So if I could give it to Mary.
Sure. My name is Mary Jevazinski, and I'm the Executive Director at Bradley Engel. And one of the programs of Bradley Engel is the Healing Roots Center, which has been around 4 or 5 years now. And the Healing Roots Center specifically reaches out and serves African-American and African immigrant domestic violence survivors and their families. And over the last 4 or 5 years has done a pretty good job at building trust within the community. And one of the people kind of leading that way is Fazia Abdul, who is unable to be here today, but will actually be the navigator connected to the gateway. And I also like to mention whenever I can that she was also a Skidmore Award winner most recently. So she's been doing fabulous work for a number of years in the community. And I'm here to express appreciation and excitement over the partnership with the Gateway. What feels correct is the sincere and intentional collaboration with community-based organizations in doing the work, rather than just building something new, spinning it off, and calling it good. I think there's been some sincere thoughtfulness in how it's been constructed. And I think that thoughtfulness values the importance of community-based work in that that is built around relationships and trust, knowing, not necessarily knowing a phone number, but knowing a face. And by linking these navigators that will be present in our Healing Roots Center with the Gateway and referring across those two entities, being able to have Fazia work from two different locations and serve two different communities, it eases transportation issues for a number of people, but also just spreads her out a little bit to be able to serve people more efficiently across Portland. So I'm very appreciative and excited about the Gateway, and I think it's been put together very well, and we look forward to reporting out on the success.
Good afternoon. My name is Karen James. I'm the program manager at Catholic Charities El Programa Hispano Proyecto Unica. As many of you know, over 10% of the population of Multnomah County is composed of the Latino population. Latino survivors face several barriers, including language and cultural barriers, to accessing services. Additionally, they face a lot of racism and discrimination from mainstream agencies and social services providers, just by default, because we're many agencies serve the mainstream population. We're very excited to be part of the collaborative in the Gateway Center because we hope that through our history with the community, we can spread the word that the Gateway Center is a safe and inclusive center that is welcoming to survivors of communities of color, immigrants, and refugee populations, and that they'll be treated with compassion, understanding, and respect, which many survivors have been through a lot, so it means a lot to them to empower them and to have services centered around their needs. We're especially excited about the co-location of the restraining order and the DHS self-sufficiency services. Much of our population lives east of 82nd, and many have transportation issues, have never been downtown, or kind of too nervous to come downtown. So the location and the accessibility through the MAX is going to be very helpful to Latina survivors and help them to take that first step to get a restraining order and to get safe and to understand there are resources that they are eligible for and can access to leave their dangerous situation. So thank you.
My name is Kadina Rutova, and I work at IMA, Ecumenical Ministries of Oregon, Russian Oregon Social Services. And I worked there since our program, Domestic Violence Program, began in 1998. Since this time, our organization, ROS, developed very high expertise in serving the Russian-speaking population in the Portland metro area, which is, we estimate, like 100,000 people. And since we serve them, we see big, like, since even if we can help them, it's still difficult for them to access all services. It can take up to several months. And by this time, everything can happen. Like, they can be re-victimized, or they can, like, have a lot of community pressure to come back to their abusers. Having our navigator in the Gateway Center can help so many people to stop domestic violence forever in their life and don't come back to their abusers. And I think it's very vital for the Russian-speaking population having this position, and I believe that many of them will be safer. So I would like you to approve this, our application for this grant. Thank you very much.
I have a question about services, and you mentioned cultural competency, and what about sexual minority groups, and who and how will that group, that community be made to feel comfortable? And
I think I need to work closer with the community to truly answer that question in the long term.